Hi everyone, I'm Lauren Petrovic and you're listening to the Responsible Luxury Podcast. This show is all about celebrating the most extraordinary leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders, and CEOs shaping the world of luxury today. Today's a very special episode of the podcast as we're coming to you live from Brooklyn, New York, with a remarkable group of ethical gem suppliers to discuss the state of the gemstone industry. Our focus turns to a clever group of entrepreneurs who are revolutionizing the gemstone industry by fostering transparent supply chains, empowering artisanal mining, and cutting communities worldwide. Their mission goes beyond the mere trade of exquisite gemstones. It encompasses the vital role of educating industry professionals and consumers on the significance of responsible sourcing practices. Drawing from my own entrepreneurial journey in the sustainable fine jewelry space, I know from experience the profound impact and meaningful connections that arise from collaborating with conscious and responsible suppliers and sourcing ethical gemstones. In this episode, we'll dive into the essence of sustainability within the gemstone trade, exploring its global implications and societal significance. We also discuss how technology, while a powerful tool, is only as effective as the intent behind its use. As we explore the rich culture of gem varieties originating across regions such as Australia, Brazil, Tanzania, Ethiopia, and beyond, one thing becomes abundantly clear: the deep-rooted foundation of trust within this community. While trust remains the linchpin upholding industry standards in a somewhat fragmented gemstone sector, we discuss the necessity for innovative solutions that bolster this trust with enhanced transparency and accountability mechanisms. I am very excited to share this one with you. Please enjoy this very thoughtful and insightful discussion. I am pleased to have Monica Stevenson from Anza Gems, which brings gems from Tanzania and Kenya directly to market with 10% of sales invested back into mining communities via education and community development, and co-collaborator on Moyo Gems, which gives market access and gemological and other education to majority women artisanal miners in northern Tanzania and southern Kenya. And we have Jay Moncada with us, who is the founder of Perpetuum Jewels, the only U.S. company with continued certification since 2015 as a responsibly sourced trade for 100% post-consumer recycled gemstones by SCS Global Services. Jay is a third generation with roots in Colombia, the birthplace of the world's most exquisite emeralds. He serves on the board as the treasurer of Ethical Metalsmiths. Please give a round of applause for our wonderful guests today. So today is also special because we're going to be capturing today's conversation in the podcast, Responsible Luxury, which shines a spotlight on entrepreneurs, founders, and business leaders that are really pushing the next generation of sustainability and responsible business practices, and really just doing some next level work and initiatives, not only in the jewelry space, but broader luxury industries as well. So be sure to check that out. Monica and I had an episode together a few months back, so that one was also really special. Monica, you've been working in the space for so many years as a responsible gem supplier. You work with miners in Africa and also cutters here in America. And I want to ask, how do you define Anza Gems outside of the conventional framework of gem suppliers? So could you start by telling us a little bit about what separates you from your everyday commercial gem supplier?
Sure. So we really believe at Anza and by extension Moyo that gems can be beneficial as well as beautiful. So there seems to be a lot of conversation around, I know a lot of designers who won't work with colored gemstones, for instance, because they don't feel like they have transparency into where they come from, the circumstances that they're mined in or cut in. So about 9-10 years ago, I took a trip to East Africa, and my mission kind of came to me and like was very clear to me after that trip. I could see the need of how hard they were working and how little they were actually participating in East Africa in the gem trade. But I could also see the benefit that could happen. So my business model is circular, where I actually go buy rough in East Africa. I have it cut. And then when I have sales, 10% is reinvested back into those communities, because I could see that the basics of everything were already there. So education, vocational training, additional scaffolding to get them to our level was already in place. It just needed like an engine. I think that gems can be an economic engine for development. So I think that's where everything kind of started. And then gender focused on women came a little bit later. So we focus on artisanal women miners whenever possible. We have faceters who are also women, all the way to the designers that we work with on a regular basis. So there are, I feel like there's ways to promote women throughout the supply chain. Yeah. So that's another core tenet for us.
The first time you set foot in Africa a few years ago, what was one of the most surprising experiences when you were there?
I think one of the most surprising things to me was when we would stop and have conversations with the actual miners, the people who were in the ground on the edge of the mine, we asked them, we just kind of off the cuff, what's your favorite gemstone? And they all had a preference. Like, they all loved the gems themselves. They didn't just see this as a hello. They didn't just see this as a means to an end. They actually appreciated the gems for what they were finding and for what they meant to them. And often they would wear them like wire wrapped around their neck in their mining clothes. But the fact that they were that value transcends everything. And I think that was one of the most surprising things.
That's wonderful. And too, it just shows like the symbolism that's so deeply rooted. It's not just a big luxurious purchase. It's something that means so much deeper.
It's inherently human to adorn. And I think that I really saw that when I was there. And that was probably the most surprising.
Looking ahead, Monica, can you share with us a particular initiative or project that you recently or have launched in the past that supports your commitment to a more transparent, ethical, and sustainable gemstone industry?
That's a lot. But I think one thing that we have initiated in the last couple of years that I think really is kind of a step forward is a lot of times the miners that we meet with for the Moyo program, majority women, so they're 60% women, 40% men usually who come to the market table. And a lot of what they were bringing is maybe a little lower quality and smaller material. Yeah. So we didn't really have an effective way, because I was using US cutters, it was harder to process that material. And so I had to leave a lot at the market table. I couldn't buy it, but I still bought a lot. And actually my associate Megan is like, Monica, you keep buying this material. How are you going to actually, like, we don't have any way of processing this. So a couple of years ago, we got connected to a small group of cutters in Chiang Mai, Thailand. So they are 5 artisanal cutters. They're a husband and wife and 3 others. And they're able to cut a little bit more for calibration and for speed. And so it allowed us to actually purchase quite a bit more from the miners and also offer, I think, a really unique value proposition for our clients. So it's one of those win-win situations.
And thinking about the supply chain for maybe those newer to the gemstone industry, whether you're coming at an angle from maybe retail or just starting to explore the colored gemstone industry, getting these ethically sourced sustainable gemstones on the market, you mentioned before the issue of not having enough cutters here in the U.S. to be able to cut these. Do you see a block in the supply chain now, getting these distributed further downstream?
You know, I think rather than a blockage, I just think there's some really amazing initiatives, but we're all pretty small. And so scalability is probably, I think, one of the bigger obstacles and issues. So this was a step in that right direction of capacity building. And then because we can buy more, because we can process more, we can buy more. Yeah. And so it's a virtuous circle. But there's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of bottlenecks. But I would say I wish that some of these initiatives, not just Moyo, but other initiatives as well, had the ability to kind of scale more. If we had more demand, more green light, then we could actually go further and deeper into these communities and actually process more.
And well, this is one step forward in the right direction, because like you said, I love those words, is the gemstone industry is like an engine, an economic and mm-hmm. social, environmental engine for these mining communities. And hopefully shining more light on these stories will get consumers in demand for these beautiful objects. Traceability is a big part of your business model. I'm curious to know what steps that ANZA has taken to implement different technologies or maybe systems to be able to track the journey of these stones and provide assurance to your customers about its ethical origins and process now.
So I think at the heart of our brand is transparency, which is different than traceability, but transparency I kind of look at as the fulcrum between like the supplier side and the end consumer side. And it works both ways. There's a balance when you have traceability and transparency on both sides. So for the end consumer, obviously, we have a short supply chain, so we can tell you, in many cases, the miner who brought it to the market day. But the miner also has transparency to what happens in the market. Like, they don't always know what has value and what the market values. So by giving them some transparency as well, they know, oh, you know, I need to focus on mining more of this quality or this direction versus something that they think has value in the marketplace, but actually isn't really rewarded. So, mm-hmm. so I think transparency can work both ways. And then from a traceability standpoint, we start with a spreadsheet at the market day where we have NGO partners who know all of the miners. And so we have a database of the miner's name, their village, what they bring to market. So at the time of transaction, all of that information is captured. And then the gems are bagged and labeled. And that unique SKU stays with it through the entire process. So, and Chiang Mai, the cutters, are willing to segregate for us. So if I send them one parcel, I get the exact parcel back versus cutting just for size or just for color or just for quality. So we do trace that whole element all the way through our system. It's a lot of work. We photograph the rough. You'll probably see pictures of the rough and the faceted. So at every step in the process, we are recording that. And then that is all information that will appear on an invoice that you could transfer to your customers if you so choose. But I will say that technology is just a tool. And we've tried blockchain, and I have managed to transfer a few of those assets to the end customer, but it is really arduous. It's still really difficult to do that. And technology doesn't replace intent. So just because you can say where something is from, that's only part of the story. Right. For us, we want to know who is at the other end of that supply chain so that we have a population now that we can educate, we can empower, we can do things like occupational health and safety training, financial literacy training. All of these things have been done with this location and this population because we know who they are and we can actually direct positive energy that direction.
I want to highlight something too, in case someone missed it, was the technology just helps powers our intention or our mission. We're not going after technology. It's just helping support what's already being done and bringing more of that transparency to market. So I want to turn it over to you, Jay, and talk more about Perpetuum Jewels. You are third generation into the business, which mm-hmm. speaks volumes, because I'm always fascinated by the legacy of family businesses being passed down. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear more from you on your vision of Perpetuum Jewels, how you view and define yourselves outside of that, again, that traditional, conventional, either miner, cutter, or gemstone dealer.
Thank you. The offering, the big banner for Perpetuum Jewels is offering an alternative to anything that's newly mined. Anything that's been recently mined. And the proposal comes from examining the materials themselves, which are precious metals and gemstones, which could perpetually be repurposed with minimal loss of beauty or of the material itself on one side. And then on the second side, the amount of value that's captured in such small elements it's a very interesting proposition. So in a place like the US, where we have consumed precious materials through jewelry for over 100 years, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of grams or carats or kilos of precious material. It's an interesting proposition to elevate that idea of a truly sustainable material that outlasts its owners generations through generations. So what we try to do is elevate that understanding that we can continue to repurpose these materials and have them to be an alternative to the process through which I would characterize some of the industrial mining operations could be, you know, more of a scarring of land and earth as opposed to benefit. So, but that's a longer and much wider conversation. So the idea is that we can provide an alternative for the end client who has concerns with environment or possible circumstances socially in certain areas. We're talking about diamonds, how they've been troubling in certain mining operations, both large and small scale. So we do that with the intention of elevating the conversation about sustainable materials, responsible sourcing, not just on the gem side, but also on the metals and overall just the practice of jewelry making.
What's interesting is the way I view Perpetuum Jewels is that instead of going to source from the mine, what you're doing is source gems from the consumer. So
correct.
Secondary economy, right?
Correct.
And finding those maybe estate jewels, old gems, and bringing it back, repurposing them into beautiful gems, beautiful jewelry pieces.
Yes. Okay. And a lot of them come with very rich historical context, a lot of beautiful inventory. It's 100 to 200 years old and gives an insight of what was important for a cutter or a jeweler at the time. And so it carries on the next owner and the next value proposition for that same material or stone.
It's like a historical artifact in a sense. I want to know more about latest initiatives or projects that you guys have down the pipeline or are going to be launching soon to really help build more of the groundwork of this next era of the sustainable, ethical gemstone industry.
Well, I'll call the idea of the project of Perpetuum Jewels to be an initiative on its own. We are the only, as you mentioned, we're the only U.S. company that's holding these two certifications by SES Global Services. They are a standards setting and auditing firm that tries to procure or elevate the responsibility in many industries, including agro and other extractive industries. So by itself, we're about to turn 10 years into their certification cycle. We find that to be an opportunity for other companies to do the same as we are, you know, and promote that value of certifications and being certified about against standards for environmental responsibility. Besides that, my origins, as you mentioned, are in Colombia. So I've been trying to find opportunities of highlighting the possibilities there about the short supply chain that exists there. And we piloted already two years ago, this notion of single origin. So similarly to what happens in East Africa and what the operations that you do is that you have a particular production from one family, from one single season, and then you carry that through cutting and into inventory to be purchased. And so that's been something that we piloted. We're probably going to continue to do that. And it's interesting because you learn about the place, specific place, as opposed to the generalization of, oh, this is just Muso, this is Chivor, or this is Cusques, right? And when nobody really thinks about it, but Muso is this huge region. It's, you know, it's like the Appalachians, right? So where in Muso? With this initiative, I'm able to pinpoint a specific area in that region and the people that were involved in the process.
That's exciting. So after, in a couple of years, when more of these stones are sourced at this origin, thinking about technologies or traceability systems to bring these gemstones onto market, how are you guys thinking about backing these claims on the origin? In other words, when your customers come to you and say, hey, Jay, how can you really prove, you're telling me these come from this origin, but how can you really prove that these are coming from
Monica? No, it's true. And Monica referred to blockchain as a good tool to operate. I'm interested to see how it continues to evolve. For example, if you are able to measure both positive and negative impact at every stage of the transformation from the sourcing to the cutting to distribution, that would be phenomenal for the end consumer, I would imagine, when the place of origin could have different temperature given change of government of change or, you know, like Colombia has had at historical difficulties with social unrest and governments and stuff. But so it will be interesting to see at that point in time how we were positively impacting the community and the process, or even negatively if that was the case. But the understanding to be the clarity and the transparency is great. So I look forward to the moment where we can incorporate that in something like blockchain and or the informational ledger that it aims to collect.
We have Responsible Jewelry Council that's building a framework for regulation and compliance for the gemstone and jewelry business. But what are you guys doing that goes beyond what the standard requirements are for RJC members? You mentioned some of it before. Maybe for those who are not members, don't know, when a new entrant comes onto market and they say, I want to be RJC certified because I want to show my customers I'm RJC certified. What's required? And then what are you guys doing to go a step beyond that?
I guess it depends. And RJC has gone through a transformation for the last decade, right? Where it was very catered to specific players in the industry, for the most part, larger players in the industry. I think they're going in the right direction. From my own efforts in being certified against the standards that we use, they were more of entry level for the smaller operator. You could be a one person team or a 10 person team and you qualify for that standard. So I would say that's one interesting element that RJC could improve on, or that there are opportunities outside of RJC that are already there for the smaller operator. We need to really learn and with a cold head that even though the US and or the Western countries are the consuming market of all of these precious materials, there is a point in time where we need to stop of, you know, the downstream exercising of policy and law. We have to understand what happens on the ground and so then accommodate rules on the ground, rules so that what happens on the ground, the realities of what happens in source countries. So part of the certification that I go through captures a little bit of that. It finds a positive and negative data in what I do. It even, for example, keeps track for my responsible source of the trade. It keeps track of how much gas emissions I produce by driving to work or taking, you know, bus transit. But the important thing is for you to be aware about those impacts and be able to talk about it. You know, how every time I ship a FedEx box to a client, I'm thinking about the carbon footprint of this, you know, you try to minimize it, see where your operations are. But so it doesn't mean I'm not going to be able to do business anymore, but it keeps you in mind, it keeps those interesting aspects in mind. So that's my take on it from my standpoint.
Yeah. So I have not found the one magical certification, supply chain, perfect blockchain solution for what we do yet. And I think it's because it doesn't really exist. So it could just be a question of kind of technology, kind of catching up with it. Hmm. So traceability, again, for, you know, I would love to be able to back up without a shadow of a doubt exactly what I'm saying. And right now it's really hard. Like, it's a spreadsheet. Someone else, though, like, you know, someone's inputting that data.
Right.
It's potentially an imperfect system, right? But what I can assure people is, like, the intent is there. The intent to actually kind of track this through the system. And to Jay's point, it would be really great to actually be able to at some point measure impact. And actually, someone even suggested that blockchain, you know, you could, because you can see, you have a window into each stage that that gem passes through, there might be a way to actually do like a little micro contribution. Like, let's say you're the designer and you get the gem and you're like, oh, I'd love to do, and it could just be a tiny percentage of the sale, but back to the miner, back to the cutter, because again, all of that information is captured there. So I love the possibilities here. It's not yet, unfortunately, the platforms were built for large producers, diamond manufacturers,
right,
diamond miners who know particularly where the adit, you know, is that these things are coming from. And it doesn't translate really well for colored gemstones, which are highly fragmented. 80% come from artisanal areas where there's not this large scale, big equipment and like people in safety vests and like marking everything down. It's just not it. The challenges that we've had with it, particularly, is like capacity building. We have TWOMA, the Tanzania Women Miners Association. We've trained them to photograph everything and put it on the blockchain. But there is a limit to, we can't even get a signal part of the time out where we are. So I think that there's limitations. RJC is, I love the fact that their code of practice is open source. Anyone right now could go onto their website and can read through what they suggest as best practices. And I could probably try to follow all of those things. But when it comes down to auditing as a small player, can I afford the auditing? We do come up against kind of these limitations of where in the ecosystem can a small player make this actually effective?
Yeah.
And I can self-certify things. I can give you a little placard that says, you know, this is what it is, or on the invoice, I can give you all of that information, but you still have to inherently at some point believe me that I'm telling you where it actually comes from. So I think we're moving the right direction. I've been very grateful for Provenance Proof kind of continuing to iterate and like, okay, that doesn't work for you. Let's try again. So I think we need partners who are willing to kind of, and you know, maybe RJC could be a partner, or Ethical Metalsmiths could help in kind of creating these systems.
And to your point, a technical solution that's going to have to come from the inside, self-built, you know, if we could be broaden our reach with people in the tech space who are building these beautiful architectures, bring their minds, and then paired with the knowledge of like you guys who've been doing this for so many years. Right. I think that's where the solution is going to come, because at the end of the day, there's so many companies that try to knock on the jewelry and gemstone industry store and say, would you like to use my product or service? No, like, of course not, because it's not tailored for the industry. So something like this is going to have to really come from the inside.
And I'm going to do a shout out for your podcast, because you're actually talking to a lot of very, it's luxury. It is not jewelry specific. Yeah. And so right. I think that some of these solutions are cross-pollinated and cross-collaborative. And
right.
The more input we can have from electronics, the fashion industry, tech industry, I do think we can ultimately come up with a system.
Yes. Well, that's to be discussed.
Yes. Yeah.
TBD. We talked a bit about ESG and sustainable development goals into both of your guys' business strategy and built into the business model. Curious to know if you want to expand a little bit more talking about alignment with the broader sustainable development goals, because again, as an independent or small player, there's so many different guidelines and regulations that you both want to abide by. For example, the SDG goal, what are you guys doing to educate yourselves or educate the customer about implementing these, not in just a high level overview, but into like everyday business practice?
It's such a diverse selection of choices for any business operation, right? And I've learned from doing is that as you grow, you're challenging yourself on certain notions. When I grow and I'm trying, and again, like the example about shipping, often, you know, it creates a challenge. It's important to understand those, measure those, and what I've learned from the standards and the certifications that go with them, you establish a baseline. Right. And the idea is that year after year, you are improving on that baseline. Everybody starts somewhere in the process, whether by interest or because consumers want you to do it, yeah. But you start somewhere. And so when you look at the variety of options there, you have to be able to what works, what's closer to you. I'm different to the majority of the suppliers here in that I'm the most removed from mining operations, because I work from a mining from jewelers, from pawn shops, from auction houses, right? It's all
from people's hoarders.
Basically, the back of everyone's drawers. I'm harvesting the unused, unwanted pass-me-downs that nobody cares for and wants to cash out. So New York City happens to be a landing log for all of these practices. But because I'm so removed, I am unable to directly impact mining communities that I care for. So it took us a couple of years to find the right idea about how to do that. We find, for example, as you will see, the majority of my stock is diamonds, all from estate and antique. Such an amount of value captured in such a small space. How can it not benefit the original source. So what we found is to partner with people that are already doing the work in the most affected area. So in my case, for example, we are collaborating and donating on a yearly basis to partners in health who do specific work concentrated on areas that are the most turned by the diamond or the conflicts around diamond sourcing in Sierra Leone, in the Kona district. So that's a great finding, for example. And so it makes me, let's call it, aligned with those goals without properly having boots on the ground. So all of us will have an opportunity to impact positively, and so that you can continue to communicate. I know my clients are proud to know that I do that alongside certifying against standards for responsible sourcing here. Well, it's nice and safe. Well, we have a pretty decent environment and safe environment without unrest. And so you have to find a way to best position yourself, position your revenue, position your influence, position your conversations like we're doing today, and create direct impact.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times, a lot of consumers probably don't even know what sustainable development goals are and probably don't necessarily always, you know, maybe, I mean, they care, but in a very abstract way. So what I have found is we're just extremely focused, laser-like focused on gender equality, SDG number 5, because if you can support women, you support, by extension, pretty much every other sustainable development goal. I think there's 17. They all are positively impacted if you empower women, girls, children, mothers. So like that's the lens that I tend to see things through. So even when it comes to packaging or photography or something like that, if there's an alternative to support number 5, gender equality, like that's kind of where my focus is.
So looking ahead, we'll start with Monica. What are some of your hopes and visions for the future of responsible luxury? And how do you believe we can inspire and empower the next generation of leaders to become more aligned with principles of sustainability and social responsibility?
You know, I would say that I think at this point, we've kind of realized we don't have a choice. Like we have to do these things. We have to start benefiting people over profit. And I see a lot of really amazing business models being developed and initiatives kind of globally where they're investing more in the communities. There's a lot more support for artisanal people who are involved in bringing the materials to market. I see circular business models like mine where they're doing a percentage back and it's actually benefiting those communities. I just feel like there's a lot of creativity, and I see I'm a parent to 2 Gen Z, and I just really love the energy that they're starting to bring to, I don't know, thinking about, I think jewelry, I'll go back to our thought of jewelry as a catalyst for change. I think if enough people are willing to really dig deeply on their suppliers, make choices based on your values. You have to know what your values are, but make choices around your values. I really do think we have a whole generation of emerging jewelers coming online that really do care about these things. Yeah. And we're giving them options, and hopefully they feel like they have choices that are going to benefit people versus just creating just another luxury product.
Jay, I'll let you lead us towards the end. If you were talking to the next generation taking over the industry and, 10 to 15 years, maybe they're looking back on this recording again and listening to you, what's one piece of advice that you'd want to give to them as they're leading these new businesses, these new startup ideas, and they go off into the world wanting to build more and contribute more value to the gemstone industry?
Sure. I would love to see a lot more, a more balanced equity in the supply chain in a way that everyone along that pipeline has ample opportunity to be in it, because as a profession and not sporadically, or because, and you're on the finishing end here, it's because it's generational and I got this business from my parents and you know, it should be more of a purpose-driven type of business.
Right.
And it's possible because, again, I keep highlighting there's so much value concentrated in these small elements, precious elements. And it's all about really the material. You mentioned that how you connect it with the idea that we value in this material. is the first thing that comes to mind. So we continue to provide that guidance as, you know, focus on more of a balanced equity for sourcing communities.
Yeah.
I think we're in good shape. Yeah.
One final question for the both of you, and I leave this open to creative freedom, however you want to run with it. If you could visually depict the industry's ideal state for everyone to see, all 8 billion people in this world will see, what's something that you would want to look like, and what would you want it to say?
Okay. Have you guys seen the meme dude with a sign or dudette with a sign, and it's like somebody holding up literally like a white sheet of paper or a cardboard sign. So mine would say people and profits. They're not mutually exclusive. So
that's beautiful.
That. Yeah.
I'll follow that lead. I think it doesn't get any more clearly cut to what where it should be, where all the energy should be focused. So cool. I support that one.
Okay. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys. Thanks.
And thank you for all the work that you're doing. We have some people that I'm sure are eager to see more of your beautiful gemstones. So we're going to get back to showing some gems. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for listening to the Responsible Luxury Podcast. If you haven't already, please rate and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you have any questions you want answered or ideas to share, please reach out to us at responsibleluxurypod or connect with me directly. And don't forget to follow at responsibleluxurypod for the latest updates. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.